This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about silence around mental health and the shame that so often causes this. So to start off, I've got a definition of shame from the Oxford English Dictionary. A painful feeling of humiliation or distress caused by the consciousness of wrongdoing or foolish behaviour. So I thought that definition was a really great way to link in how shame can so often cause silence in people that experience mental illness, and also those generally who either observe it or interact with people who have mental illness. And that can cause so much harm, to the extent where charities like Time to Change believe the stigma and the shame is actually at this point causing more harm than the conditions themselves. It's a lack of support, it's a lack of speaking up, it's a lack of going to the doctor that's actually harming people further. The illnesses are always naturally going to come up, but it's how we deal with them that's really the pivotal thing for so many people's experience.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that that's huge, the way that we deal with them, because we all deal with it so differently. But you're right, it's not necessarily the illness. It is that starts it off, but more and more, you can imagine, it's all the other things that come with it, as you said, such as shame, the guilt, that all the other feelings that people have that actually cause a longer term illness than necessarily the illness in the first place. But I do think it's interesting, because the shame and the silence, a lot of silence is caused by shame, and a lot of silence is also caused by people's own reasons for not wanting to share. And that might not always be shame. It might actually just be their own reasons that I don't want to feel like this. And if I feel that if I do, I'm admitting it, as opposed to kind of keeping it in denial, which of course will cause further issues. But it might not always be linked to shame. They're quite interesting how silence and shame is absolutely linked, but can also really be so separate.
I think that's a really good point, because in the definition of shame we have here, it talks about the consciousness of wrong or foolish behaviour. And for many people, they do still feel there's something wrong with them for having mental illness symptoms. Mm-hmm. And of course, the mental illness symptoms are something that needs to be addressed, but that doesn't mean there's something fundamentally wrong with you as a person or who you are as an identity. It's actually just another illness that all of us can get. In the same way, physical illness isn't some kind of reflection on your personality or your identity. It's something that can happen to any of us. I think that's where there's so much work to be done and so much more education needed, so that people have a baseline understanding that it is quite common and not at all wrong to experience mental illness symptoms, and that actually getting the support for them is the right thing to do. Not silence, not discrimination. And I've got a few stats along that vein as well. So from the National Institute of Mental Health, they found that 40 to 50% of all people with bipolar disorder or schizophrenia go untreated each year. The number of untreated people suffering from some other disorders, such as anxiety or depression, is even greater, mostly due to associated stigma and shame.
I was just really shocked by that, especially because, you know, schizophrenia and bipolar are high-level mental illnesses. Like, how are you living your life? It must have such an impact. The shame around that and living with that on your own must be so lonely, so detrimental to your relationships and yourself, you know.
Right.
It's hard to hear.
Yeah, and that's where this kind of the shame and the silence creates problems in and of itself. And I've mentioned this on the podcast before, how as a species, we're the only known animal to be able to judge our own emotions. And that can create such a problem, because we can be experiencing symptoms of mental illness and then we judge them. And so we're getting anxious, and then we're getting anxious about the anxiety. We're worrying about that worry, and these things build. And so it's quite natural that issues can get bigger when put under this level of judgment. And that's something that's so important to remove, so that we can feel the feelings and work on them without the feelings becoming something we need to suppress or to hide, because that's not how you get the support. And I know certainly in my own experience, I'm very glad to have got the help that I've got when it comes to my mental health. I know that I've had times where if I didn't get the support, I would have got a lot worse. And I'm really glad that I realized that at the time, and that I can see that in hindsight, because it is quite scary to think about how much worse things could have got had I not sought help.
Yeah, and I wish in my life I'd have sought help and recognised that sooner, which is why, again, the campaign, you know, for mental health in schools and in education is key, because it's that prevention and the ability to talk about it from a young age will just absolutely reduce the stigma and reduce that silence that's part of our day-to-day social life, you know, for generations to come.
Of course, I think that's so important. And in the interview with today's guest, it was difficult to hear some of the reaction she got from friends and from some family towards her actually being really supportive to people in her life who were experiencing mental illness. There was a certain judgment that came through from a lot of people. And that's really hard to hear, because you'll hear in the interview how that complicated things for her. And really, that's the last thing you need to be worrying about. If you're there trying to support somebody, that's enough to be thinking about, without also worrying about how does this look to other people.
Yeah.
And so on the subject of how things look to other people, we have some interesting stats from the Priory Medical Journals. So they commissioned a survey into how people react to learning about mental health problems in others. So 1 in 4 students were too ashamed to reveal their mental health problems for fear of being mistreated by their peers. 1 in 6 said that their friends did not take them seriously when they revealed their condition. And over 33% admitted to feeling emotionally distressed after learning of their friend's condition. So I found these really interesting, looking from both sides. First of all, how people being open about their mental health problems to their peers and to friends does still result in mistreatment, does still result in people behaving inappropriately towards them. But then equally, from the flip side, over 33% of people hearing about these experiences their friends are going through, finding this emotionally distressing. Because even if we're not someone that experiences mental illness in our life, we're going to be around people that do. And it can make such a difference how we approach that, how we respond to that.
Yeah, I mean, what did you think about the 1 in 4 students feeling, you know, didn't want to talk about it with their peers? Were you surprised by that? With it being students and like the generation that you feel is maybe more open and understanding and acceptable maybe than the generation before them?
I think so. I think that's definitely a factor. We assume that younger generations are a lot more open-minded, but there's still a lot of misunderstanding out there.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that education will definitely help with, but also a reduction of stigma in general, that we can move as far away from this idea that for experiencing mental illness, you are weak or you are wrong, and that you need to be silent about it. That actually the best thing is to be open. That's the thing that's going to make you the most comfortable, but it's also the fastest way for other people in your life to understand your experience. So I'm not really surprised. I know how much work there still is to reduce stigma, but it's still always going to be hard to hear these statistics and how much more work there is to do, because I see the progress and yet there's still so much to do.
Absolutely. And I mean, the over 33% admitting to feeling emotionally distress, I feel like that's okay. Like, you might feel emotionally stressed. That doesn't, that, you know, I'm trying to look at it from the other side. I would potentially feel emotionally distressed. It wouldn't mean that I wouldn't want my friend or whoever to come and talk to me. It wouldn't mean that I couldn't handle it. But I might feel emotional about my friend coming to disclose something. And I think even if there's more awareness and we talk more about it, that might still be the case. We're humans, aren't we? You're going to have that emotional change in maybe if somebody close to you is coming and talking to you, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a barrier.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way of looking at it, actually, that there absolutely isn't anything wrong with this. And that's something I definitely experience. I worry about people in my own life and their mental health. And that is a natural, empathetic human reaction. But the more we can reduce stigma, the more we can build up understanding, I think it will help shift it. So more and more of that distress is about how do I look after the person, not around they're wrong. They shouldn't be feeling this way. That kind of invalidation, that kind of discrimination that can come from a lack of understanding. One last stat then I wanted to finish up with is from healthline.com, and that looks into how often shame and silence holds people back from getting the support they need. So experts estimate that 1 in 4 people have treatable mental or emotional difficulties, but up to 75% of Americans and Europeans don't seek the help they need, which is often caused by shame. So again, that's quite a sobering one, but I think it's an important one to finish up with on why talking about silence and shame is so important for today's episode. There is so much more work to be done, and it's hard work, but I'm so glad to be doing it and to be part of it. Grand. So Deanne, today's guest, is an incredible mental health advocate who started off supporting those in her personal life with their own mental health struggles, and seeing how much silence around mental health, the lack of conversations about it, made those people's experience worse, she's since gone on to create a jewelry business all around increasing conversations about mental health, but also tackling that silence. And she's someone that I found really inspirational to meet. She's so lovely, and she's just one of those people I think we'd all want in our corner. Yeah, I'm looking forward to sharing the interview I did with Deanne in a moment, but first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
My name is Deanne Magnette. I am originally from Belgium. I grew up in Switzerland and now live in Los Angeles, California. I had a pretty easy childhood growing up in a country that provided everything that a child needs. I was from a small town in Switzerland in which there was a mental hospital. And though it was always the start of a good joke as kids, it was always something I knew was there. And I think that's important. And it's something that you don't have here in the United States.
And so what kind of things would be joked about when you were young?
Well, you know, you go to school to the bigger town nearby. Everybody comes from small villages. So naturally, when you say you're from Marsens, which was the town I lived in, everybody would make a joke, you know, oh, you live with the crazy people. And though it sounds very mean as an adult and very ignorant, the fact that we grew up with a mental institute that everybody knew about is actually not so much of a bad thing.
Right. So you had an understanding right from a young age that people suffered with mental illness and that there were forms of support out there.
Exactly. And as an adult now, looking back and dealing with the issues that my family has been having for quite a few years here in the U.S., I miss that. I miss that ability to know where to go when somebody doesn't feel well. And I think that is the biggest issue here in the United States. It's not only the stigma, but also the lack of mental health care.
Absolutely. And so in terms of our theme for today's episode, talking about shame, that really makes that a lot worse, because there's already the shame around the stigma. And then if the support services aren't there, then it can be even easier to just not get support and to just stay in the shame and not speak up. Would you agree?
Yes, shame and lack of education, or I don't like to use the word ignorance because it has just such a negative connotation, but really the lack of education towards mental health, because eventually if somebody suffers from a mental illness and then has nowhere to go, and then there is a lack of education, that means that your family and parents and close ones don't understand. You have nowhere to go. And the big problem we have here in Los Angeles is homelessness. And a lot of homeless people are mentally ill because they have nowhere to go. And it's really, really sad.
It's an increasing problem near where I live as well. And homelessness here is very much underreported. So it feels like something that's being ignored, and it can be easier for people to try and write off someone that's homeless and find excuses why they don't deserve the support rather than engage in the problem. And I think there are definitely parallels there with how people treat mental illness at times. They don't understand people's situations enough, or it can be uncomfortable that they don't have enough knowledge. And so it's easier to kind of discriminate and distance themselves than to try and empathize and understand.
Yes, because if there is an understanding, hence the education, there is a beginning of empathy. Because ultimately, even though I lived in a town like this in Switzerland, I didn't quite understand mental health. I knew about it. I never had an issue with it. I never criticized or judged anybody for it, but I sure didn't understand it until it happened to the members of my family, where I had to understand. And then I realized how uneducated I was on an emotional level.
Right. And do you mind sharing when mental illness did first come up in one of your loved ones?
So quite a few years ago, I met my boyfriend in one of my classes, and I am not necessarily a romantic at heart, but it surprisingly was it. I knew it, and still I didn't believe in it. I knew it. And I remember him having a keychain with the picture of his parents, which I found very little corny, but
I think that's quite, you
know,
sweet.
I knew he was close to his parents, but soon after we started dating, his father became very ill and was diagnosed with cancer. And about 10 weeks later, he passed away. So his mom showed sign of normal grief. But unfortunately, as the month went on, his mother just was not doing well. And not only was not doing well, but became just worse and worse and worse. And it became very difficult to manage. It was very difficult for her to live alone. My boyfriend Roy would have to leave the house in the middle of the night because she would call and she would be in a panic or something would be happening. And eventually we realized that something needed to be done and she needed to go somewhere. A therapist wasn't going to be enough. And that's where we didn't know where to go. Naturally, we asked around and they sent us to the only mental health hospital in town that was actually decent, actually good. It was good. It's UCLA. And she went there. It was a very nice facility, but they only kept her for a week and she was discharged. Right. Basically, they tried a couple things. They're like, oh, sorry, nothing we can do. We don't have enough beds. She has to go. So from that point on, she went, I cannot even count how many places we had to go with her at any hours of the day and night. And that was us beginning to date. So we didn't go to the Hollywood Bowl for a picnic, or we didn't go on getaways. It was mental hospitals and institute and places trying to figure out where she can go and fight with her landlord who, you know, kept coming after her for the rent. And we kept saying, she's sick. Can you give us a week and we can figure things out? It was just a nightmare.
The landlord, did he know what kind of illness she was suffering from?
if we could have just sat with him and explained him, he would have been a lot kinder. But that is just a small example. You know, the landlord is nothing. Okay, he just wants money. You know, whatever. A landlord is a landlord. But I'm talking, we had issues with friends disappearing, people not wanting to understand, people asking me, how are you? I'm like, I'm okay, but Roy's mom. And they would say, oh, that's still going on. Well, I'm sorry, it's not going away. So why don't you become a nice and understanding friend and, you know, try to be there for us instead of just saying, oh, she's still not well. No, she's not.
It's really hard to hear. And particularly, that's an example of how far it can reach as well, that it wasn't just friends that knew her directly. It was friends via you that had all this judgment towards her. And, you know, that kind of judgment that frequently comes out around mental illness and the ignorance and stigma that can come from it. It's really, I think, where a lot of the shame comes from, that if you're met with that kind of reaction, it can feel a lot easier and safer to not talk about these issues and to not get support.
Absolutely. And I see it with my boyfriend, who's been always very supportive of me and what I'm doing and willing to open himself up and me talk about his mother to everybody on my website, on this podcast, and willing to open up in order to destigmatize what happened to her and in order to prevent what happened to us, you know, in the future with other people.
Right. And it's also concerning because she had depression, right?
It's depression mixed up with anxiety, which she always had, but was able to manage her whole life and had two beautiful boys. But she became, you know, psychotic. And she just, at one point, she just wasn't herself at all and begged us to go. She's like, I do not want to live. And I understand. I would tell her, I understand. If there was something I could do, I would, but there's nothing we can do. And I'm sorry. I feel grateful for the fact that because she had suffered in the past of mental illness, maybe not quite as severe as her episodes of psychosis, she was always willing to take medication. Which is a relief, you know, because I know from going to group meetings and people who have, you know, family members who have suffered of similar things that we did, you know, the big issue is a lot of people who experience similar things as her refuse to take medication.
Right. That's definitely must have made things a lot easier that she was open to that. But also It's disappointing to hear how limited the support was, even towards anxiety and depression symptoms. You know, it's understandable with some conditions that there's limited resources or understanding, depending on how common they are. But when they're the two most common mental illnesses in the US, and then they're struggling to even treat those symptoms, there's a much bigger problem there.
Yeah, it's the shame. I mean, thankfully, things are getting a lot better. But the shame back then was enormous, which explains why I started my company, because I remember people even whispering the word depression or anxiety. Now this is much different. Things have changed, and things started changing after Robin Williams committed suicide. He was such a beloved actor here and represented so much joy. There was a click, something happened, and all of a sudden, companies like Mind and others became at the forefront of the battle.
And I think a lot of people connected so strongly to him and to his joy. And so to find out someone that came across like that was struggling so much and so depressed so much of the time, I think was really powerful here as well, with just breaking down that stereotype of like the sad and slow kind of depressed person. I can't remember what guest it was I spoke to recently that mentioned she only ever thought of Eeyore when thinking of depression. You know, that was the only kind of reference she had. And actually depression can come in all forms and affect all people. And so it maybe took, to some extent, someone so high profile and so loved committing suicide for people to realize how limited the stereotypes were. It's great to see that people are finally waking up to that.
Coming around.
Yeah.
It took, I mean, there's still a lot of work to do, because now there is another issue that we need to dive into, is know that this is very, seems to be much more acceptable to talk about depression and anxiety here. It only limits itself to a certain demographic. The stigma amongst minority is even greater here. And that is something else, though I feel that there is a big change happening. Somebody belonging to a different ethnicity might feel very different about destigmatizing of mental health.
Yes, absolutely. And as you know, that's a big part of us campaigning for mental health education, to try and level yes. that playing field so that all young people grow up with a baseline of knowledge.
That's fantastic. I saw that on your website. I think it's just a good, such a wonderful way to really, like you say, level out the playing field, to get into, reach every person possible, regardless of where they come from. Mm-hmm. Or it's so smart. And I believe there are some organizations that are trying to do that. I just know locally of a few members of council, men and women in the city, who are trying to do this. But there's so many fronts that we have to attack here. You know, homelessness, I know a lot of people are working towards that. And then education, for sure.
Right, absolutely. And I think what's so brilliant about education, it affects everyone. You know, often you can assume that people will be a lot more understanding than they are. And a lot of it Absolutely. Is just the lack of education. Am I right in thinking that you face quite a lot of judgment from your friends of not only what was going on with your boyfriend's mum, but also that you were sticking in it and you were standing by him?
That's correct. And not only by him, but also I had a roommate exactly around that time who had a manic episode, and I lived with him. He was my best friend, and I had never seen anything like it. And I had to stick by him too. I remember being out with a couple girlfriends at a really, you know, hip restaurant in Los Angeles. And one of my girlfriend, who doesn't know Chris, my roommate, and the other one did, she, you know, made a funny comment about wanting to find somebody. And, you know, so she heard I had a nice roommate, and she's like, tell me more about your roommate. And my girlfriend next to me, though she is such a lovely girl and understanding person, she said, oh, but Chris is crazy. And it's interesting wow. because the amount of rage that was in me, I usually don't get angry. But I have to say, when it comes to my mental health and my friends or family members, even though people don't mean anything bad about it, that's not what they mean. They just don't think before they speak. Similar to the yeah. issue is I don't think it's about my mother-in-law. I don't think they did not care about her, or they were necessarily being judgmental in a bad way. They just didn't know, didn't understand. And when you don't know and don't understand something, you become uncomfortable. You become uncomfortable yeah, because you don't know what to do. You don't know what to do. So you want to escape the moment that you're in, because you don't like how it makes you feel. Nobody likes to feel ignorant. Nobody likes to feel helpless. So the problem here of the shame has nothing to do with what was actually happening to my stepmom, but how it makes people feel, because they don't know what to do. Instead of just, I don't know, open your computer, Google it. I mean, it's very easy. Google it. Yeah. Just the fact that if you find a definition of bipolar disorder or a manic episode or depression, anxiety, or somebody who has psychosis, just Google it. Just the explanation will make you feel a little better, will allow you to empathize, and then scroll down Google and you'll see what to do if somebody experiences any of this. It's easy.
Right, absolutely. But I think that's such a great point that you've raised, that a lot of the time it is that feeling of uncomfortability that creates a separation, that it's not your friends being unsympathetic necessarily, but it can just be that they're uncomfortable with their lack of knowledge. And so you not being in a situation which talking about it makes them uncomfortable would be easier for them. But whilst that's understandable, and I think we should have some sympathy for that, I don't think it's an acceptable excuse. You know, it's one thing to say,
I understand.
You know, this is uncomfortable, I need to know more about it, but then you've got to act on that.
Oh, yeah. I think for the most part, people have, I have to say, and I feel bad because the friend that I'm talking about is by far the most supportive friend. But again, it's always like this. It's always people who suffer the most, who are the most aware, that have to do most of the work. It's just how it is. And I know it's extremely frustrating and unfair because it shouldn't be up to me to make somebody else understand what I'm going through and be for me to be understanding of them when they should be understanding of me. And that's where the problem is. But unfortunately, I've noticed this in any work or advocacy, is it's always up to one person, and usually the person who suffers the most, who has to do most of the work. Because I've noticed through the years of advocacy is my level of understanding and taming the rage that I feel when somebody makes an ignorant comment. It allows me to enter this conversation, this pocket, and be able to, while staying calm, explaining them what is happening, how it feels like, what they can do, and for them to take that information and hopefully expand it and tell somebody else.
Yeah, right. And
but for this to happen, I have to stay calm and I have to understand that, you know, they don't understand and it's up to me to do all that work, unfortunately.
Yes. There's a kind of middle ground, isn't there? Because it can be easy for us to say, oh, you know, you need to, it's your responsibility to go away and do the research. But sometimes people don't even realize how much information is out there, because if they've not had a reason to educate themselves on mental illness, then they just may not have any idea about that. Whereas with us working in it, you build up so much of an understanding and you see the information all around you. You know, you end up following it online and you end up regularly engaging in more of these conversations and you kind of get that learning process going constantly. Whereas for many people, when they're coming across mental illness or even just conversations about it for the first time in their life, sometimes it can take that little nudge from someone that knows a bit more to be like, you know, maybe try looking at this website or this resource, or here's what I understand of this condition. Maybe it'll help if I explain it.
And we, people like you and I, have just such a variety of information and way to present it. It all depends. Not long ago, I was in my backyard with a friend of ours, and we were talking about suicide. Again, she said, I don't understand why people would do that. And again, the rage comes up, you know, bubbles up. I have to tame it and understand where she's coming from, and then pick how I'm going to explain. So sometimes I go on a scientific level. You know, I think she would understand how the frontal cortex work and what happens when somebody feels suicidal. Or sometimes I will attack the misunderstanding from a different front, a more spiritual front. Or sometimes I will go into imagine how it would feel when. Or I would say, you lost your mother 10 years ago. How did that make you feel? And then they'll explain it. And then I'm like, well, imagine you have that feeling without losing anybody. And it's all the time. You know, we have the option to pick from all sorts of information and really choose the best way to make them understand.
Right. And that's a really lovely, proactive way of going about it, because some of the alternatives can create shame on the other person's side as well, the onlooker or the person that could be more supportive of those with mental illness. They can easily be shamed for their lack of knowledge. And so
that's,
it's really
true.
Great.
That's true. That's exactly it. And I think that is a very important point you come up with, which kind of comes back to the issues we're having here on a political level, and I'm sure you have your own. Mm-hmm. But it's this way of say, you don't understand, you're ignorant, you're not educated, therefore, you know, I don't want to talk to you. We can't do this, because it creates this absolutely huge divide. And at that point, everybody's walls are up and nothing gets done. And in this case,
if you'll pardon the pun about walls.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Gosh, let's not even go there. But that's, that's, I mean, to talk about really quick about what happened 2 years ago here in this election and this president, I have to say, though, in every bad things, there's something good happening is more and more people after this election actually went to see the doctor and expressed feelings of anxiety and depression due to that election and were able to actually get help for that. So it wasn't all a bad thing, I guess.
Yeah. Although if it's increased the level of those feelings.
Yeah, no, true. That's true. But I'm just saying it was, I think that people are much more willing to talk about how the election made them feel.
So it's a good kind
because
of...
Because it didn't go their way.
Yeah, that sort of national pressure point of stress created a conversation for people to talk about their feelings more in depth.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm so glad you found a positive there. That's really great.
Well, I have to. I have 2 more years to go and then maybe 4, so I better brace myself.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I think that's a really good way of looking at this whole subject of how divisive not just politics is, but so often people's conversations at the moment, any kind of serious topic becomes very tribal, where it's this is what people like me think and this is what people like you think. And actually that breaking down a dialogue in many times causes more harm than people saying inappropriate things.
Absolutely. It's so necessary for me not to let that instinct of wanting to protect people I know who suffer from mental illness and just lash out at the people who don't understand, you know, instead of calming down and opening the door of the conversation and inviting people in rather than just shut them out, because that's not doing anything.
Absolutely. And one of the things that really inspires me about you is how supportive you've been, that I'm sure that helps your family so much that you are there to explain things and to help them get across how they're feeling when at times they're feeling their worst and maybe least able to express themselves. So are you aware of what led to you being so supportive and understanding when it came to mental illness?
Yes, the man I loved so much, his life fell apart, just every bit, everything that he had, from his health to his house to everything, just vanished in front of our eyes. And I just could not understand how this was happening. Now, granted, it was the middle of our recession, so that didn't help on a financial level. But I knew, as somebody who grew up in another country, I'm like, how is this happening? This would never happen at home. And again, I'm not this European who hates America. I live here. I'm an American. I love this place more than anything. But when it comes to mental health care, I will always believe that what I grew up in is far better than what we have here. And I realized that I felt, when his life fell apart, I felt like it was him and I, his mom, on this island. And that was it. I mean, it was this constant fight, even a fight to justify why I would stay with somebody who had these problems. I mean, like I said, my friend were like, do you think this is a good relationship for you? I'm like, what would you like me to do? So wait, because things are not well, I should leave? This is not what relationships are about. Love is easy. Love is easy when everything goes well. But love is really, truly meaningful when everything goes wrong. And that's what happened. And I was not going to leave. Now, I did learn, though, something very important. For a very long time, I couldn't be happy, because I'm like, how dare I be happy if my partner is very unhappy and it's struggling? And that's when I decided to found my company, because I realized that it's okay for me to grow in my life and at the same time find joy in my life, even though the person I love the most is not finding any joy. And that's why I created this company and allowed me to, and while being there for Roy, to be able to continue on my own path while staying parallel to his.
And it's really great that you had that level of insight. You could see that in the same way he was going through a difficult time, you were going to stick by him in the same way you would expect him to do the same for you. You know, that makes complete sense to me.
100%. I mean, he would not even hesitate. And I think that's also something to consider if you're in a relationship. I guess nobody brought that up like you just did back then. Is what would he do? Would the role be reversed? And he would have done exactly the same.
Yeah, and that's great to hear. And that, to me, is real love, you know, because yeah. That's the ups and downs you go through just with life, whether you're on your own or in a relationship, that the pretty, perfect weddings and all the photo albums, they're the good days. They're the things that we often strive for and compare ourselves to. But that's not reality. Yeah. That's far more a Hollywood reality than real life.
Yeah, and you know, here we love that stuff. But what you said, it's interesting because we're not married here. And we're quite the anomaly, okay? People love getting married here. And it's interesting because people always ask me, they're like, well, why aren't you married? And what is your security in this? And I'm like, well, guess what? One day, Roy told me, he's like, you know what? If there is a major disaster, like the end of the world or major earthquake, if we're not together, just I want you to know I will find you. And that's all I ever needed.
Oh, that's very sweet. And
that's all I need.
And I understand that you have the security in your relationship. The security is in the conversations you have. The security is in how you reassure and look after each other. And so whilst marriage can be an incredible thing for so many people, I don't personally think the marriage itself should ever be the justification to stay together. It should be.
I am so with you. I so agree.
Yeah, it's about the relationship and the love, and that actually if you're staying together just because of something that's legally binding, then there's not really much relationship left, I think, at that point.
And I saw that happen with my roommate, Chris. He was dating this charming young lady right after his manic, and they broke up. But I remember her telling him, what am I supposed to tell my child if we have kids? Oh, sorry, daddy is depressed right now. I'm like, wait, what? You can't put that on somebody. Yes, he suffers from depression right now, but you cannot make him feel bad about it. That's not what marriage and union and having children together is about. Is, you know, yes, you know what he's going through, and you should take him the way it is without thinking, you know, oh, well, you know, that's going to be inconvenient in the future.
Yes. And also, not only does that feed into shame, but it also creates emotional distance. It puts up walls where the person is far more likely to cover up their symptoms because of that negative reaction. And so it's very much the worst reaction you can have. You know, what's that old saying? People say, if you've got nothing nice to say, don't say anything. And that would be preferable than reacting like that.
That's not what a union is. I mean, you take people for who they are. And that is, I think, what feeds most in the stigma is, in order to beat stigma, you have to take somebody exactly for who they are. And that includes a diagnosis or not.
Right, for sure. And so you mentioned briefly a little bit earlier some of the reasons that led up to you starting your business. So do you mind sharing a bit more about how that got going and what it means to you?
Yes. So as you know, the story of my mother-in-law and my roommate, as I felt very alone on that island of mine, I sat at the corner of my bed and I said, there's got to be something I can do. What is the problem? Stigma is the problem. That was, for me, that was the problem ultimately, because I wasn't mad at people for not understanding. I was just disappointed that for the lack of education. for the lack of knowledge available to people, so we can be there for each other. And the fact I was there for my friend and my boyfriend wasn't such an anomaly to everybody. It shouldn't be. We should all do it. So I remember after the keychain also a story from Roy, where when he was a child, his mom would send him to school, and him and his brother, and she would pack a note inside of the lunchbox saying, "I love you, Infinity." And that was his story of his mother. And as I'm sitting on the corner of my bed, I'm like, the name of the company will be Love Infinity for everybody. And I also thought, okay, so now I need to give money to an organization. So National Alliance on Mental Illness. And what is interesting is as I'm finding out about NAMI, I remembered that the week earlier, Roy had told me about this group meeting that he had heard about, he wanted to join. And it happened to be a NAMI group. So I saw him and I'm like, you know what? I found this great organization and it's NAMI. And he's like, yeah, that's where I want to go. I'm like, okay, let's go together. And we did. And we went to, you know, on this, just like the AA meetings, it's a 7 p.m. In a school that's, you know, nobody is there. And it's just a group meeting about family members who have people who suffer from mental illness. And it was extraordinary. It was extraordinary for Roy to hear stories about people who experience similar things, but also a lot worse. You always think you have the worst until you hear somebody else's story. So it was very good for him. And afterwards, we stayed with a few of them just talking and changing resources. And this woman came up to Roy and said, I found a couple places you might be interested in trying for your mom. So it was really nice. So as soon as I got home, I was like, that's who I want to donate to. And then I was thinking, what could I make? And jewelry was the number one thing that I knew somebody would wear all the time and would definitely, if it's appealing to the eye, definitely would start a conversation. And that was it. I took jewelry classes and I made a couple pieces like it was nothing. I remember taking the class and the instructor was like, "You've never made this before." I'm like, "Never." And he's like, "How did you do this?" I'm like, "I don't know." So it was just in me. I had my mission. I knew what I wanted to do. I never made jewelry.
You were so passionate about this cause. So
I made it. It came from somewhere else. You know, it's when you have like the universe just giving you your purpose and it just comes out of nowhere. And I made that. And now we're making all sorts of things. We have a journal coming out and that's how I started.
It's such a lovely story of how you saw that need there and you knew you had this kind of skill set and understanding and really made the most of it. I really love particularly the story of where the name came from.
Right? Yes, and isn't that adorable?
It is so sweet. But also I think in that it's a really good antidote to shame and to the negative feelings we can feel towards ourselves about mental illness. You know, this societal or personal pressure to hide what we're going through, and that name, Love Infinity for All, to me kind of conjures up the idea of self-love as well, that it's not just about
Absolutely.
You know, a mother and her son. It's about how we can all have more compassion to each other, but also vitally for ourselves, so that we don't feel the need to hide what we're going through, that we can be more open and we can get support when necessary.
You're deserving of the love.
And of course, with the work you're doing, there's a little bit more money and resources out there for people to get the support. So
yeah, we also do fundraisers that, I mean, I work with an organization in San Francisco, again, to prevent suicide, because as you know, they're symbolic because of their bridge.
It is interesting, though, how the more you get into understanding the mental health field and the more advocacy work, the way you see it all around you. And
yes.
I think that's a really good example of that, because you can read all the statistics, and one that's used a lot here in the UK is that 1 in 4 people experience mental illness every year, according to Mind. And you know, you hear that all the time, and you hear about how common suicide is, and it can almost just seem like numbers, like there's no meaning behind it, because we can sort of get almost a little bit immune to the meaning. And yet, the more you understand, the more you see those real examples that clearly help you explain to people what living with mental illness is really like. And it brings a kind of closeness to these experiences. For me, certainly, having a podcast like this, it's really opened my eyes so much more to how prevalent mental illness is and how much more need there is for mental health support for everyone. That it's not about the one in four, it's about the four in four. Mm-hmm. How can we all work towards having that kind of health as part of our health in general, in the way we work towards our exercise, we work towards yoga with wonderful instructors like you. And it's actually a lot more interconnected. And we talked a little bit off air about that, how you see that link and you see how important exercise is and yoga is for not just people's physical health, but their mental health. Do you mind sharing a little bit more of your thoughts on that?
Of course. Of course. It was very interesting how I transformed as a yoga teacher, because I was teaching yoga before I became an advocate, and how I teach now that I am an advocate. You know, in yoga, obviously, every yoga teacher knows what yoga means is to unite mind, body, and, you know, soul, breath, and all of that. But for me, I understood that there was an avenue for me to also advocate for mental health through my yoga, by instead of focusing on the workout, changing it to a work in. Because if you enter a yoga class and you do it for the workout, then you're going to do just that, is you're going to have a workout. But if you enter a yoga class knowing it's a work in, so you work on what's going on between your ears and, you know, try to limit the ego and the judgment and the opinion and what you should do and what you should be doing and what you should look like, and on and on and on and on. So might as well enter a yoga class focusing on what's inside, knowing that no matter what, you're going to look good. So drop the workout, focus on the work-in, because the work-in ultimately includes the workout.
Yeah, that's a really wonderful way of looking at it. And certainly when I've done yoga, I see a lot of that crossover. There are elements of mindfulness and meditation that's built into that kind of practice. And to me, the more I work in a field like this, the more I see how that's so vital. That, you know, so often people will be held back from looking after themselves physically because of their own opinions of themselves. Too often they think they're not worth it, or that it's not going to make a difference. And that says a lot more often about what's in their mind than the reality of their body and their exercise capabilities.
I tell that to people in my classes all the time. I'm like, it's not because this is hard physically that it means you're inadequate. Because every time we feel challenged, we feel inadequate. It's just natural human reaction, just like fear, just like doubt, just like shame. It's a matter of, instead of the ego pushing you away from that feeling, which is perfectly human, just allowing yourself to be human and not let the ego criticize you because you feel inadequate. And inadequacy is feeling shame, feeling out of shape, feeling, you know, that you're not good enough or not worthy or you don't belong there just because you're comparing yourself to others. I want people to feel really comfortable when they come in my class on the inside.
Yeah, and I'm really sure with you as their teacher, they will be. You certainly have that really welcoming and accepting energy that's not only serving you through that, but has clearly made so many people through your life feel comfortable opening up to you and allowing themselves to be supported, which can be difficult as well.
That is by far the most rewarding thing since Love Infinity for All, is I have people emailing me or walking up to me and say, my mother committed suicide. Oh, my brother is schizophrenic. And it just comes out like it should be. And they know I'm not ever going to judge anybody for it, ever. And that was the biggest, most when I doubt myself, like anybody, I'm like, am I doing the right thing? Is this enough? And then you guarantee the universe is going to send me an email of somebody telling me how, you know, their story and being very comfortable doing it.
Right. That's a brilliant way of looking at it. On that nice positive note, we'll wrap up there. If people want okay. to find out more about your business, get some of your brilliant jewelry, or I don't know, even if the listeners are local enough and they want to find out about your yoga practice, where should they go online?
Online, you can go on our website. It's loveinfinityforall, all1word.com. Our Instagram is usually where all the current things are being posted. So events or blogs or interviews like yours, and that's Instagram. It's @loveinfinity, and usually everything's on there.
Brilliant. And I'll leave a link yeah. for the website in the description as well.
That sounds great. I really appreciate everything you do, and talking to you is such a pleasure. I could go on and on and on.
No, thank you. It's been so lovely talking to you. Thanks so much.
Of course.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.